Welcome to the Ouch Talk Show for July 2014. I'm Kate.
And I'm Rob. Disabled people are often given the wrong kind of help when we don't want it, and it can be a little frustrating. Comedian Lawrence Clark admits that he sometimes doesn't respond to the public as nicely as he could. And in fact, he can be downright horrible sometimes. He'll be telling us about the cheering stories later.
Do you feel like an easy target for crime when out and about? We meet blind American Carey McWilliams, who carries a gun for protection, and Stephen Nichols, a man who teaches his own method of self-defence to disabled people.
And Jessica Tom, a.k.a. Tourette's Hero, is here to talk about her new Edinburgh show, Backstage in Biscuitland, and she'll go up against Lawrence Clark in our topical quiz later.
And we finish with a song that one man with CP has written in the hopes that it'll help him find love.
Oh.
Stay listening, do not move a muscle.
Ouch, disability talk from the BBC with Rob Crossan and Kate Monaghan.
Okay, let's say hello to Lawrence Clark.
Hi.
Hi. So he's going to be with us throughout the programme, or you, should I say, your presence. You're going to be with us throughout the programme.
Yeah.
Regular Ouch listeners will know that Lawrence is a comedian with cerebral palsy and a rather deep thinker, the Kierkegaard of disability issues. He was in a 2012 documentary that followed him and his disabled wife, Adele, building up to the birth of their second child, and it was rather wonderfully called We Won't Drop the Baby. Is that still the case?
The
drop-free zone?
The title wasn't ours. Idea, but yeah,
the joy of television.
Yeah, I mean, touchwood, there's not a lot of bruise on him. At least three now, so.
And still alive, impressive.
Still alive, yes.
How much attention did you get after the show? Did you find that you suddenly were getting pointed at in supermarkets a lot more?
Yeah, we did for a while afterwards. I think I've talked before about hating people calling you inspiring. And that's what I got for months afterwards. People would say, oh, you're so inspiring.
Just for not dropping your baby, basically.
Just for conceiving and bringing up a child, basically.
They mean well, come on. Now, Lawrence has a new show at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year, exploring the darker side of disabled people, which we'll talk about shortly. But he'll stay here with us while we do the next item.
It's time for Ouch News. Welcome to Ouch News, where we recruit correspondents from the Ouch listenership who can bring us passion and knowledge from their corner of the disability world. We have one of our citizen journalists on the line with breaking news. Live from Gatwick Airport, it's Michael Holden. You are a new recruit, so what are you the correspondent for?
I'm the travel correspondent.
What is the latest travel news, Michael? I gather that the new airport rules that all electronics must hold enough charge to be switched on could cause disabled people some bother?
It can. First of all, when we're travelling, most of our kit is packed in different backpacks, and unloading them and getting them out, switched on and onto the X-ray tables can take considerable time. This usually causes an awful lot of consternation and impatience by the people waiting behind us. The other thing is that we need to have them fully charged. Now, I have to say, in my case, I rely on my electronic devices, so I tend to keep mine fully charged all the time.
So what kind of electronic devices are we talking about here that you rely on?
I use my mobile telephone and also an iPad, but when I'm travelling on business, I also take my laptop with me.
So what exactly is this new rule then?
Basically, they are saying that mobile devices are being disguised as terrorism detonating devices, which I have to say I don't think too many disabled people are inclined to do.
Lawrence, what about you and your electric items?
I'm sat in a powered wheelchair here thinking, God, what am I going to do? I'm going on holiday in a few weeks. I normally dismantle the chair and pack the battery away, but am I going to have to get it all out and assemble it just to get through the X-ray?
Michael, what is the answer to that? Is Lawrence going to have to get it all out and make sure he can show that it gets turned on?
No, it only applies to portable electrical devices. The electronics in wheelchairs are not subject to this kind of scrutiny.
So it means that our queues may just now be a couple of days rather than a couple of weeks
exactly. Next
time we're at Stansted Airport.
That is precisely right, yes.
Yeah, how distressing.
An ever-burdensome journey through the airport.
Never has a time been better to take the train, quite frankly. But anyway, it's not exactly news, but this might be news to some people, that going to the toilet on planes, so we're told to keep hydrated whilst flying, but of course what goes in must come out. So, Michael, as somebody with, is it motor neuron disease, is that correct?
It is, yes. Yes. Motor neuron disease, yes.
So how do you go to the loo on a plane then? Sorry to pry, but I feel the public need to know this.
Well, I have had several experiences. Most of the larger airlines, particularly on long haul, have aisle chairs. If I'm on my own, the staff are very reluctant to use them for health and safety reasons. Mm. If I have a companion, they're obliged to take me to the toilets. But as with ever on these things, they have the wheelchair symbol on them, but they're not large enough to get a aisle chair into.
But
has offered me a cup and suggested that my fellow passengers around me move whilst they put a blanket over me. I urinate into a cup. They had no aisle chair and no way of getting me to the bathroom, and suggested that they would ask the passengers to move, at which I was horrified at and said, no, I will just have to persevere and hope I can last till I get off the plane.
Absolutely. So
experience, I've learned to self-catheterise.
When you say the aisle chair, you mean literally just the chair nearest to the aisleway? Is that what you're...
It's a special wheelchair,
okay,
which is just wide enough to go up and down the aisle. Mm. Which they usually store on board long-haul flights.
Rob, as ever, showing his lack of disability knowledge there. But, Michael, can you tell me a bit about this self-catheterisation? Isn't that painful?
No, there are many different methods of doing it. And
so just to be clear, it's putting a tube up your pee-pee hole so that you can get the pee out. Is that right?
Yes, well, that is one way, but there are new gadgets where, rather than doing that, you can put a sheath over your penis, and it goes that way. You can purchase these things, but in my situation, I had a district nurse that taught me how to do it properly.
So you choose to put a tube up there instead of having the hassle of using the aisle chair?
Well, when I'm on my own, if a member of the crew won't help me, I have no choice other than simply risk urinating in my seat.
Yikes.
Well, again, I mean, you've been incredibly honest about this, you know, far from ideal situation, but I'm going to pursue this to its logical conclusion. We've spoken about weeing. What do you do when you want a poo?
Believe me, I'm sure any disabled person will tell you they always make sure they go to the bathroom for that motion before they get onto any flight.
But what if you've got a bad stomach? This would be my biggest fear. I get bad stomachs a lot. I hate the thought of not being anywhere near enough a toilet at any point.
Yes, I do have a friend that takes off-the-shelf medication that will supposed to ease diarrhea. When you don't have diarrhoea, it will cause constipation. He has a fear, so he takes those kind of medication. I have to say myself, I haven't tried that.
So this is kind of creating a bowel firewall, essentially, is the idea.
Something we would not recommend.
It's good bar conversation when you're telling a yarn or two about travelling around the world.
What do you think airlines could do to make it easier for disabled people to go to the loo with some vestige of dignity?
Well, I think they are constantly trying to improve their service, but it's not just the onboard equipment. They need to improve customer service to people with disabilities. And some airlines are quite good at it, and others are really quite terrible.
There's also, because people who are disabled aren't allowed to sit anywhere near the exit doors, so that if there's a crash, we don't block all the nice, normal people fleeing for their lives.
Yeah.
So consequently, that means we're normally sat further back and further away from where the toilets are. So there's actually a greater distance to get there as well.
Thank you very much, Michael. I hope you'll bring us more travel news soon. But now it's time for you to sign off.
I've been Michael Holden, travel correspondent, reporting for Ouch News.
And if you want to be one of Ouch's correspondents, email us at ouch@bbc.co.uk now and tell us what disability-related subject you are an expert in, and you could be on next month.
You don't have to do it now.
If
you want to go to the loo,
no,
do that first.
Right now.
If you're self-catheterising right now, carry on with that. Then email us.
Email us now. So, Lawrence Clark is still with us. Now, Lawrence, we mentioned you had a show at the Edinburgh Fringe in August. So, what's it called and what's it about?
It's a cool moment of instant regret.
Nice title.
Thank you. I think it's one that everyone can relate to in some way. It's about those times where we say or do something without thinking, think, the other person pissed off, look, and realise that we've really put our foot in it.
I mean, I feel like this is a topic for Rob, because I feel like he's the kind of person who might upset people quite often.
I find that both sickening and wrong. But isn't
everyone a bit unpleasant at times, Lawrence? What's different for disabled people?
I should just weigh in with Rob. I was on this podcast years ago giving you dating advice.
Oh, yes, I think I
gave some really bad dating advice. And then about a year later, I was on a holiday with my wife and she borrowed my iPod to go and lie by the pool. And she listened to the podcast because it was still on there and she'd not heard it at the time. And she was furious.
With how mean you'd been to Rob?
Yeah. I think I said something like, describe whoever you can get.
you were an improvement, Lawrence. I used to get my dating tips from Nuts magazine.
So what's different about disabled people and being unpleasant?
I think the thing is, we do get a lot of crap. Can I say crap?
Yeah,
great, good. That was a good choice. There were several words running through my head at that moment and I chose the right one.
Well done. We appreciate it.
we're all very grateful.
And a lot of it's not meant to be nasty. A lot of it comes from people trying to help or be polite or just be nice to us. So when someone, you know, is outwardly hostile, you can tell them, you know, where to go. But when they do it with the best of intentions, it's that so much harder. You feel quite mean.
So can you give me an example of that, of when that's happened to you?
Or when someone's trying to be nice.
And you've maybe come back at them.
Well, every time I go in a supermarket, I think, because people see you trying to get stuff down from high shelves. It takes me a bit longer, but I can do it myself. And what they'll do is they'll come up and say, do you want a hand? But before I reply, they'll take it off the shelf and put it in my basket. And sometimes it's not the thing that I wanted.
So you're doing an assumed shop?
Yeah.
Then, went out for cat food, came back with tampons and economy vodka.
And since Rob was an offer of help, a rhetorical question. But, yeah, after an hour, I'll end up with all this crap in my basket. And, of course, I've then got to go and find someone else to ask them to put it back on the shelf again.
So this is an example of people trying to help but actually just making your life a lot more difficult and annoying.
So I think it's understandable but when you get this sort of treatment on a daily basis, you are occasionally going to not responding not quite the best way. And I wanted to do a more honest comedy show, because certainly in the past, I've done lots of shows that other disabled comics have about how we're treated. And that's quite right, yeah. And we are treated in very bizarre and funny ways. I thought, well, actually, the way I react to that treatment sometimes could be better.
So, Lawrence, I mean, we were talking, we brushed very briefly on the subject of dating earlier, and I have been told that you behave very badly on a blind date once.
So, yeah, this is just a terrible confession. I mean, when I told my wife this story, her jaw, I've never seen someone's jaw literally drop.
Oh dear.
It actually did. But years ago, this was, I think I worked out it was 17 years ago. So I went on a blind date, and it was in Glasgow, and I was staying with a friend of a friend, and they set me up with a friend of theirs who had cerebral palsy. And I guess that's why we were set up, because you thought, oh...
Of course, you'll love each other.
If you've got the same disability, yeah, you tend to get married, yeah.
Indeed. So, they told me beforehand she was really looking forward to it, really looking forward to meeting me, and it was really built up. So I'm sat in the pub, you know, wondering what I let myself in for. And then I clapped eyes on her, and she's stunning. You know, long auburn hair, piercing blue eyes, lovely slender figure.
Amazing. And then?
I couldn't understand a single word she said.
But hang on,
you couldn't understand.
I couldn't. And it was a combination of Glaswegian and noisy pub and cerebral palsy.
So what did you do? So I would imagine that you treated her with respect in the way that some people have trouble listening to you. So you took time to work out what she said?
Yeah.
Don't rub it in.
No? Is that not what happened, Lawrence?
So I stuck by my principles. I've always believed treat others the way yourself would like to be treated.
Of course.
Unless you're a sadomasochist. So I ask you to repeat it again and again and again and again. Obviously, it starts to feel a bit more awkward every time she repeats herself and I can't get what she's saying. So eventually, I smile, I nod my head, and I just say, that's nice. Oh,
that's what I do. Oh. That's my trick. You've stolen it.
But then it gets worse, because I'm stuck there, aren't I? Because I don't live in Glasgow. I'm staying with a friend of a friend who I don't really know. So I can't just up and leave. So I decide that, you know, have a few drinks, maybe relax. If I get around you, that's the one time we can't communicate, because I say same again, she nods her head, job's a good one.
So,
gradually, I begin to relax a bit more. I don't feel that bit as awkward, and I think, well, if I just do all the talking, this will work. So, and this goes on for a while now. So I basically start to tell her my life story. And she sat there sort of smiling and nodding and, you know, and then just as a few of the beer kick in and my speech starts to slur even more, she turns and says to me, that's nice.
Oh,
I mean, that's like a really cringy story, isn't it? It still makes me cringe even now. But that's basically what my show's about. There's all these times where, for want of a better word, I behave like a complete arse.
It is okay, though. We should. I feel really strongly we should point that out, that in the same way that able-bodied people have bad days where they're a bit more acerbic and rude... You know what? Weirdly enough, so did disabled people too. We have days.
Is it just
that
yours are your bad days are every day?
Mine are more frequent than yours, possibly. Yeah. Well, this is what I mean. I mean, go on then, Kate. I mean, a vision of charm and niceness most of the time. I'm sure at some point you have been mean to someone who's tried to help you but got it wrong.
Yeah. I mean,
I want a specific example, and I want it now.
Well. Obviously, I'm a wheelchair user, much as you never believe that that's the case, Rob.
Only because of the small matter of the fact that I've never, ever seen you in one.
That's mere details, Robert.
I've only ever seen you in a wheelchair on TV.
Oh, it's all coming together now.
That's the only place it matters, guys, OK?
Literally,
it's just
ramping
when it's on
up
TV.
My disability.
Anyway, this is not the point of this conversation.
No, but it's an interesting side avenue,
isn't it? So when I'm in my wheelchair and if somebody dares to talk to my partner who I'm with instead of me, I will get incredibly angry. And even though they're being very nice to my partner and, you know, trying to help or anything, I just, get irrationally angry about it and I just start shouting at them and say,
you have
how
snapped
dare
and
you?
Said, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah,
you
have
done that.
Yeah.
And what's their, has their reaction been one of instant remorse or do they become defensive?
Usually defensive, just saying, oh, sorry, I didn't realise, I didn't know, you know, and I just think, well, there's no excuse.
Yeah.
And then I have to justify my anger to myself and then I feel bad about it, so...
Well, listen, Lawrence's show, Moments of Instant Regret, is on at the Assembly George Square from the 1st to the 24th of August in Edinburgh, part of the Festival Fringe. Thank you, Lawrence. We'll be chatting to you again a little bit later.
Cheers.
Well, if you're listening by accident and wondering what the heck this is, well, it's Ouch, the disability talk show from BBC News. I'm Kate Monaghan, and the last voice you just heard, well, actually was Lawrence's, but before then it was Rob Crossan.
Hello.
Coming up...
Come into my life.
That's Nick Farmer with his song Make My Heart Your Home, which you can hear in full later. Funny man Lawrence Clark is with us for the whole show. And joining us now on the phone from Iowa is martial arts expert Professor Stephen Nichols. Hello, Professor Stephen.
Good afternoon to you.
And how are you doing? What's it like over in Iowa right now?
It's actually extremely beautiful, very warm, very sunny, and I'm about to start a coaching certification course at the Iowa Department for the Blind.
So disability hate crime is reportedly on the rise, but how vulnerable do disabled people feel and what can we do to protect ourselves? So as we've just heard a little bit about, Stephen teaches disabled people a self-defence programme which he's devised himself. But to kick this discussion off, let's hear about what one disabled man in the US is doing to solve his feelings of vulnerability.
Kerry McWilliams is blind. He was a victim of domestic abuse as a child. He was bullied so badly at school that his collarbone got broken and has been left in constant pain by a horrific dog attack. He also claims that a car driver once tried to ram him. McWilliams is the first totally blind man in the US to hold a licence so he can carry a concealed gun. Now, be warned, the following clip contains some graphic descriptions of gun use. I spoke to him a couple of days ago and asked if he feels that being blind makes him an easy target.
The fact that you just have a cane makes it like the criminal element is his easy target, and the fact also you cannot avoid a dangerous situation or run from one when an attack would occur, because there would actually be more danger than making a run for it, because, well, you could trip over a curb, hit an obstacle, whatever. So you're really just going to have to stand and fight realistically with whatever means you have available. And for me, I have a 9mm pistol for self-defense. It has to be, by requirement of law, point-blank range for a blind person.
What does that actually mean? How close to you does a person have to be?
Well, basically, I consider my gun a blade with a bang. It's basically the muzzle's up against the assailant, and boom. That's it. I mean, there is no marksmanship involved in blind concealed weapons permit or blind self-defense with a gun because, like I said, you have to be basically body-to-body contact with your assailant, so you're going to know who that is. And when you shoot them, it's just basically put the gun up, and it's a short-barreled gun with a lot of power that has ammunition that explodes inside the person's organs and stuff and does all the damage internally. And basically the whole key to the person not being shot is to basically leave your hands off the blind person.
In the UK, it's completely illegal for anyone to carry a weapon. So people take self-defense classes and things like that to help themselves feel safer. Couldn't you just do that?
Well, I've taken self-defense classes, but unfortunately, if he's armed, all that martial arts training, you're going to look really, really funny doing all your kicks and stuff and then get a bullet in the gut. That'll end that, because you only see that kind of stuff in the movies.
We'll be putting up a longer version of this interview on our site soon, bbc.co.uk/ouch. What do you think of that, Lawrence? What are your immediate reactions?
I'm scared.
Yes, rightly so.
I'm quite glad that there's 6,000 miles between us, to be honest.
Do you feel as vulnerable as Carey does?
I have to say no, but maybe I'm a little naive. But I'm not constantly looking to be attacked at any moment. I think as you grow older, you do kind of feel a little bit more of a target. So I used to remember my mum was always wary of more than one young person out on the street. It would intimidate her. As I grew older, I do sort of catch myself doing that. And I have to say, no, they're just a young person. They're not automatically looking to attack me.
So, Stephen, now you've devised a method of self-defence for blind people called One Touch. Firstly, take us through the absolute basics of what that is.
Well, as our fellow mentioned from the United States, yes, it's possible in the United States and legal for blind and disabled communities to carry firearms. That's absolutely out of the question in Britain, as we know. Mm. So let's write that off. And one of the major situations which occurs is, of course, dealing with the sense of vulnerability through learning to protect oneself. There's absolutely nothing wrong with anybody going to a karate or an aikido or a judo class. There's no reason why a blind or sick disabled person shouldn't do that, but that tends not to be the case. There are a few instructors out there who have adapted their art to work with blind people and disabled. But one of the situations which has really come up, which became very clear for the formation of the One Touch, is no one had really gone into the details as to why disabled people who are perceived as being disabled are targeted. And on top of it, what kind of techniques are particular to the nature of the assault. For example, if someone is perceived as being blind, and I use the word perception a lot with this, if you know, many people are visually impaired or blind and don't carry a cane, although potentially they should. But let's say someone has a cane or a dog, it's actually going to change the nature of the assault. And nobody actually studied that sort of an investigation. Nobody conducted research to find out how these assaults take place. Was there a basic pattern? And therefore address the situation accordingly.
So the three things I've got written down here, Stephen, are the three key points of your technique, which is threat recognition, threat analysis, and appropriate response. So can you just very briefly take us through each stage there?
Yeah, absolutely. Threat recognition is when a person feels threatened in any way, shape, or form, and it could be something as benign as an overzealous Boy Scout trying to drag a blind person across the street as they feel that's what they want, you know, something which isn't technically a violent threat by any stretch, but to deal with that, all the way up to a genuine, concerted, dedicated, aggravated assault. In other words, to do genuine physical harm or the actual appropriate response. The threat recognition is one thing. The analysis of that threat is extremely important to find out how dangerous it actually is. And the actual response has to be appropriate in the eyes of the law. And it also has to err on the side of safety of the person performing the techniques to get out of that situation. Basically, the law very much is inclined towards people who are viewed as vulnerable members of society. being able to defend themselves, and the legalities are very clear on this point.
So what is a one-touch move then? Can you give us a sense of what it looks like and how it works?
Sure. We've analyzed the nature of assaults, and this is extremely important. In other words, there seems to be a very genuine pattern that most assaults upon people who are blind, visually impaired, or perceived as blind, visually impaired, or having a disability, tend to be very up close and personal. They tend to be from grabs and pushes. So a very simple example of this would be the perpetrator is grabbing someone and placing one's hands upon them, dropping them to the ground through the process of locking joints and nerve techniques.
Is it just for blind people, or does this work for other disabled people as well?
Not at all. We work with deaf-blind. We're doing an enormous amount of work with the Blind Veterans UK, which sadly can involve secondary neurological damage. It can involve a single, double, or triple amputee, which of course means working from a wheelchair.
And what about me? Could I use it? Because I have virtually no strength whatsoever. So I'm always a little bit scared that if I ever got attacked, I wouldn't be able to do anything.
That's a really, really good point, because that's exactly what the attacker wants you to believe. And the truth is that, yes, of course, there is an element of size, there is an element of strength. But by and large, these techniques have been proven again and again highly, highly effective. And unfortunately, or fortunately, any way you want to look at it, those people who have taken these courses have defended themselves successfully. We have quite a bit of data on that, to be honest.
I'm a wheelchair user, so I've always thought the best response would be to punch them in the nuts.
Well,
do you approve of damage to another man's testicles, Stephen?
For the cause of good and justice and Her Majesty's legal system approval, then yes.
Oh, that's a wonderfully considered answer. Now, I'm visually impaired, so I'm a classic sort of one-touch client, I would imagine, but I really don't feel vulnerable. I've never gone through my life feeling particularly threatened. Is this just me being naive, do you think? I mean, am I foolish by not taking you up on your offer?
No, not at all. I couldn't disagree more strongly. If you go through life not feeling threatened or anything, I don't think that's naive whatsoever. I don't go through life feeling threatened. I don't see any reason why I should, or more importantly, why anybody should. The benefits of the training itself involve spatial awareness, you know, a far greater sense of body mechanics, health, wellness, dexterity, all those secondary points, which are so extremely important to just basic good life and good health and good living.
Can you tell us about some of the people who maybe have been attacked in the past and had to come to you to get help?
Absolutely. We've had people who've been in violent domestic situations who've come to learn the One Touch Project. We have elderly, people who are frightened to go out. We've had children, basically for anti-bullying. We've had actually everyone from every walk of life you can imagine. So, I mean, the spectrum for the application of the One Touch has been proven again and again enormous. With regards to the veterans, for example, the social rehabilitation, going back to these men and women who've served for their country and saying, you now belong to a demographic which you may or may not want to belong to, but you actually do. And you have an opportunity to apply all of your previous skills to teaching and to helping other people by becoming an instructor.
And the manifestations of it are actually pretty, pretty impressive, kind of superhero-esque. I mean, I've got a story here who used the one-touch move, who was frail, shall we say, blind and 50, and two men tried to steal her laptop. Can you tell me about that?
Yes, absolutely. This happened in Colorado. The lady's 50 years old. She's described as 100 pounds, soaking wet. I don't know what that is in stone, but not very much. And somebody tried to steal her laptop on the bus, and she, as I mentioned earlier, applied pressure to his joints, forced him to the ground. The rest of the people on the bus leapt upon him. The bus driver called ahead, and she actually held him. I mean, she didn't withdraw from this. She actually held him by applying pressure to his elbow. The police arrived and took him away to jail. I mean, this is a situation where, quite frankly, if you want my honest opinion, it would be better to give up your laptop than risk being damaged. But she performed the techniques more than adequately and very successfully.
It certainly sounds that way. So, Stephen, just remind us of your website again.
Oh, it's info
yep.
at onetouchproject.com. info@onetouch.com. And the one is the digit one, not O-N-E. So info@onetouchproject.com. And we've got ongoing classes at the R&IB in Judd Street in London. And we're working all across Britain with Action for Blind. And we'd love to hear from you.
Appreciate your time, Stephen. Thank you very much for talking to us today.
So let's say goodbye to Stephen Nichols and thanks for the self-defence tips. And hello to Jessica Tom, a.k.a. Tourette's hero. Jess has Tourette's syndrome, which causes physical and verbal tics, which you might be able to hear. How are you, Jess?
I'm very well, thank you.
Jess or Jessica?
Jess.
Okay,
Biscuit.
Good.
Unless I've done something naughty.
Same with me. I'm Kate to everyone, apart from my mum when I'm in trouble. And then I'm Catherine.
Really?
Yes,
I
am.
That in mind.
Yeah.
Aladdin.
Jess says Biscuit a lot. Hedgehog. I heard on your website it's around 16,000 times a day you say Biscuit.
We haven't updated. We haven't done any trials of that recently. That's from about 4 years ago, Biscuit. So my Biscuit brother-in-law counted how many times I said it, Biscuit. So, yeah, Biscuit. I don't know what the current Biscuit-to-breathing ratio is, Biscuit, but it's probably something quite similar.
Let's keep tabs on that, shall we? Okay. Now, you're soon to be pitted against Lawrence Clark, who's still with us in our topical quiz.
Oh,
but
no.
Before we put your disability knowledge to the test, you've also got a show in Edinburgh. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
It's called Backstage in Biscuit Lab, Biscuit, and it's at the Pleasance Above for the first 2 weeks of the festival, Biscuit, and it's my first time, Biscuit, going to the Fringe. Hedgehog, cats, and it is Biscuit improvisation, Biscuit spontaneity, Biscuit storytelling, Biscuit puppetry, and it takes audiences on a sort of strange tour of the surreal world, Biscuit, that is Biscuitland and the world my tics Biscuit create around me. And it's me with another performer called Jess Mabel Jones, Biscuit, and it's a sort of one-woman show for two women. Biscuit.
Okay. And all the performances, it says here, are relaxed ones.
Biscuit.
What does that mean?
Except for one uptight performance, Biscuit. Biscuit. Yes, yeah, all the performances will be relaxed performances. Biscuit.
What does that mean?
Biscuit, that means that people who might not be able to, Biscuit, observe traditional behaviour in a sort of way that you would expect in a traditional theatre setting, Biscuit, will be very welcome. Biscuit, it also should mean that it's a Biscuit slightly different Biscuit experience for a more relaxed experience for everybody who's watching the show, Biscuit. There are also two signed performances, Biscuit, on the 7th and the 14th. Okay. Biscuit.
And kids come.
Biscuit. Biscuit, because I'm one of the 10% of people with Tourette's who has coprolalia, Biscuit, which is the sort of technical name for obscene tics, Biscuit, there might be some involuntary obscenity, Biscuit, but also there are some sort of slightly more grown-up themes, Biscuit. But we're saying 16 plus, but I would love it if there were some younger people who were interested in
I might bring my little boy, because he's used to involuntary obscenity all the time.
I work with children and young people, and I've never had a problem.
Now, you've been doing talks for a while, haven't you? But you're taking it to a bigger audience. So what led to that?
Biscuit, I suppose the very starting point for Biscuit wanting to do Biscuit a theatre show, Biscuit, came from having some quite difficult experiences, Biscuit, going to the theatre myself, Biscuit. And to start with, it was like that was the one seat in the house I knew I wouldn't be asked to leave, Biscuit. But as I sort of thought about that more in more detail, Biscuit, creating a show, Biscuit, that allowed room, Biscuit, for spontaneity, Biscuit, and took into account the fact that I'm, Biscuit, neurologically incapable, hedgehog, of staying on script, was a really interesting creative challenge.
Tell us about the time you got asked to leave the theatre.
Biscuit, well, I wasn't asked to leave, Biscuit, but I was asked to move, Biscuit. So, Biscuit, I went to see an amazing show, Biscuit, by Mark Thomas, Biscuit, called Extreme Rambling, Biscuit, and I'd done all the stuff that you would expect beforehand. I never just rock up to the theatre, Biscuit. I always, Biscuit, put a lot of planning and thought into it, Biscuit. So I'd called them, I'd spoken to Mark, Biscuit, met him before the show, he'd introduced me, Biscuit, and explained to the audience that I'd be making noise, Biscuit. But so
were you okay with that?
Biscuit.
Was that not a little bit embarrassing or uncomfortable to be announced by Mark Thomas?
We'd talked about it, and he'd had my permission to do that. Biscuit, I am much more comfortable with people knowing and understanding why I'm making noise than making their own assumptions, Biscuit. So, Biscuit, I'm never really embarrassed by people explaining, Biscuit. But I was humiliated by then being asked to move, Biscuit, because people around me were Biscuit complaining about the noises I was making and saying that they weren't going to come back, Biscuit. And it was a very upsetting experience. So I did stay and watch the rest of the show, and I'm glad I did because it was amazing. Biscuit, Hedgehog, Cats. But I did so from behind a glass wall, Biscuit. And actually, it was a show that was about separation and about segregation. And Biscuit, not to be able to watch that with other people was upsetting.
There's but nauseating Biscuit, irony to that.
Biscuit, yeah, Biscuit. Biscuit went on to have some more successful Biscuit trips to the theatre, Biscuit, and see some amazing stuff, which really made me feel, Biscuit, like making a piece myself was something that I should do and could do. Hedgehog, Biscuit.
And you do a job Biscuit. That I imagine most people would imagine somebody with Tourette's couldn't Biscuit. Do, which Hedgehog. Is continuity announcing.
Biscuit, yeah, Biscuit. And actually, it was one of the jobs that I probably thought I couldn't do, Biscuit, along with Butcher and Biscuit Living Statue, Biscuit. But actually, of course, I can, Biscuit, communicate information clearly, Biscuit, just with added biscuits. So, yeah, I've been doing continuity announcing for Channel 4, Biscuit, and I'm sort of part of their freelance continuity team, Biscuit. And
is it live? Biscuit. You do it live?
I don't do it live, I do it as live. Hedgehog, Biscuit. So I record the links while the programmes are on and then play them out, Biscuit, as live.
Well, I think you should try and combine all three Biscuit, of these Hedgehog. Impossible jobs. So your next continuity job, live from Covent Garden, Biscuit, dressed up in a top hat and carving up some veal. Trying to do all three.
With a sheepdog.
Exactly. I think this would be ideal.
So what are your favourite, some of your favourite tics then?
Biscuit, Hedgehog. Oh, well, there's so many. Biscuit, Hedgehog, I like lots of, Biscuit, I've got lots of good choose ticks. Biscuit, Hedgehog, donkeys or rainbows, choose. Biscuit, these aren't actually ticks that I've said before now. Biscuit, as soon as I start, doors or horses, choose. Roman Catholics or Doberman, choose. Biscuit, so Biscuit, as soon as I start talking about choosing ticks, Biscuit, I'll come up with a load of sheepdogs, wow. Sheepdogs or alien velociraptors, choose.
Do you come up with new ones all the time? Hedgehog, like every Biscuit. Day are there new ones?
Biscuit, yeah, every day. There's obviously the regular ticks, Biscuit, I know I say hundreds of times a day. Biscuit, like Biscuit and Hedgehog and balls. Not really balls. Biscuit, Hedgehog, Biscuit, Hedgehog, Aladdin, Biscuit and Aladdin, Biscuit.
Aladdin.
Biscuit. Yeah. And then there are Biscuit sort of more occasional ticks, Biscuit that may come up once or twice and they tend to collide, Biscuit, really unusual ideas together.
I think one of my favourite ones that I've been told about is Les Biscuit. Dennis farted on a rainbow.
Biscuit, Biscuit, yeah, right. Well, Biscuit, we on our website, Biscuit, on my on the Tourette's Era website, Biscuit, there's over six... almost over 6,000 ticks, and we encourage people to Biscuit browse them, enjoy them, and then make art in response to them and upload it to the site.
I challenge anyone to come up with Hedgehog. One which is more Monty Python-esque Hedgehog. Than Will tripped over Hedgehog. A lactating Biscuit. Teapot and ruined the touring shroud.
Is there any sort of logic? So, did you have a troubling childhood experience with the Biscuit. Oh.
Not as far as I can work out or remember. Biscuit, maybe I've really blocked it out. Hedgehog, Cats, Biscuit, anything I've ever known or experienced, Biscuit has the potential to become a tick. Biscuit, Hedgehog, Biscuit. But yeah, why certain words stick around? Biscuit is a mystery. Hedgehog, Aladdin.
So in the time-honoured BBC Manor, we are now allowing you about 8 seconds to plug your show.
Biscuit, it's called Normandy and it's a bit like Aladdin. OK, it's nothing like Aladdin. It's at the Pleasance Above. Biscuit from the 1st of August to the 16th. Biscuit in Edinburgh, just next to Asda. I don't have any clue about whether that's accurate or not. Probably not. Hedgehog.
Again, Asda are not available for comment, though we'd love to hear from you.
But what about Tesco's? OK, stop listing... What about the Harris Academy in Peckham? Biscuit.
This could go on, but you know what? I'm gonna put a block on this right now. Quiz time. Right, so this is where we test the detritus, the dregs, the people left in the studio at the end of the show and see how much they've retained from this month's Disability News. So, Lawrence and Jess, who knows the most? Let's find out. Our very first question to you both is, which VIP stopped his car to speak to a disabled girl this month?
The Pope.
Yes.
Correct.
Correct.
Is that
Straight
actually
up.
True?
Yes,
yes,
it is.
Really?
Was that a tick?
That's a tick.
Amazing. That's unbelievable.
Biscuit, I had Biscuit...
I can only think that maybe I have read something about that, but I really had no idea about that at all.
Well, maybe cats. This is a special superpower where your ticks allow you to answer all questions correctly.
Biscuit. The lottery numbers, please.
82.
Nine.
That was phenomenal. But yes, Jess's answer, or should I say tick, was correct. It was Pope Francis, Frankie to his friends. The girl was waiting by the side of an Italian country road with her family to see him pass. And signs had been put up urging him to stop and bless the girl, which he henceforth did.
Why was a man with one arm fined by police in Germany this month?
Biscuit Romans? I don't know. Biscuit.
No, sadly. Sadly, no.
The Pope thing was a one-off.
What was it? Was it for doing a Nazi salute?
No, it was not for doing a Nazi salute, Lawrence. The answer is because he was cycling with one arm.
Biscuit.
A bit unfair, perhaps, or perhaps a bit obvious, but an overzealous officer fined theatre box officer worker Bogdan Ionescu.
Ionescu,
thank you, Robert. €25 for not having two brakes on his handlebars. He gets around his home city of Cologne using a modified bike that allows him to operate both of the brakes, but one of them is operated by his foot, hence only having one brake on his handlebar. Get it?
What an incredibly long-winded way of saying he's got one arm.
Well, indeed. The police have apologised and given Ionescu a full refund.
What are primary school pupils with special educational needs twice as likely to experience?
Biscuit. Bullying.
Mr. Clark.
Biscuit. Bullying.
Bingo.
Biscuit.
Indeed,
well
so.
Done, Jess. A bit slower, but we got there.
Romans.
Yeah, persistent bullying, unfortunately. My study found 12% of 7-year-olds with special needs felt bullied all the time, whereas only 6% of non-disabled pupils felt the same. This research was carried out by the London University's Institute of Education and said the bullying they refer to covers hitting, shoving, name-calling or being excluded.
Biscuit.
What reason did a disabled man in Italy give for being single?
Biscuit. Fairies. Okay. Biscuit. Hello.
You know what? That's Jess's answer, or should I say tick, is almost as random as the real answer.
Yeah. Biscuit. Yeah. I feel like if you just keep saying words, one of
We're
them.
We're going to get there.
Bears. Aladdin. Mother Teresa. The whole of Kettering.
No. Biscuit. Lawrence, any ideas?
Nana. Couldn't get to nightclub scene.
That is so close, actually.
His mum was interfering. Biscuit.
No, that's probably likely, but no. The answer is the bus. A man called Lacopo Milio. Why do I get all the hard names today? Trended on social media this month when he responded to a tweet by a politician praising the country's railways. In response, loads of disabled people angrily posted pictures of themselves with signs saying that they want trains and buses to be made accessible. Milio blogged, "I'm single because of the bus," and urged politicians to help.
So thank you.
Is that the reason that you're single, Rob?
What,
because
of the bus?
Because of the bus?
No, more due to my lack of Learjets. I'm down to two. Our final question. According to a recent survey, what percentage of non-disabled people think that the 2012 Paralympics improved attitudes to disability?
80. Biscuit.
Close. Lawrence? Hazard a guess, please.
70.
He's so close. I'm going to have to give it to Lawrence because it's 68. Only 56.1% of disabled people surveyed held this view. The survey was carried out by the Office of National Statistics to mark 2 years since London 2012. The Minister of State for Disabled People said the Paralympics had led to a transformation in attitudes, though the rosy glow may be slipping somewhat, as previously the figure was in the 70s for non-disabled people at any rate.
Jess, so, do you think that attitudes have improved since the Paralympics?
Biscuit, the Paralympics was great at showcasing disability sport, but I think there have also been a lot of stuff in the media, Biscuit, that's undermined the image of disabled people and has reinforced stereotypes, Biscuit, and myths and preconceptions about disability since. And I think lots of the stuff that's happening politically at the moment seeks to undermine anything that was good in terms of what happened during that, Biscuit, period.
So in the noble spirit of Ouch, we are all winners. So I could, mainly because I wasn't really counting which of you got the most questions right. So Lawrence and Jess, you're both winners because all disabled people are. And of course, in also the BBC Time Honoured Way, you leave with nothing other than our best wishes and an escort out to BBC reception, where there are some paparazzi waiting, I saw
Biscuit
earlier.
No,
I don't think
I think they were waiting for me.
Were they? Yeah. I thought it was over you or Nick Grimshaw. It was only one of the two. So that is your lot, Kate.
That's your lot. Well, I'm trying to steal my lines yet again.
Sorry.
That's your lot for the July 2014 podcast. The production team were Kathleen Hawkins, Damon Rose, and the studio manager was Nasser Purvis. The producer was Emma Tracy.
And music this month is by Nick Farmer, a fellow with cerebral palsy from Bournemouth, who has posted this song up on YouTube and SoundCloud. Now, Nick is looking for love, bless him. With help from his music producer brother-in-law, Nathan, he wrote this song about his feelings in the hope that on hearing it, the girl of his dreams might come forward.
It's called Make My Heart Your Home, and let's hope it works.
Yeah, we're going to get him on the show to find out if it
works
or
we
not.
Yeah, we need an update. So
He didn't say whether he's looking for a boy or a girl, though.
He's just looking for love.
He's looking for a girl, right? I've just been informed of that. Okay, so we wish you well in your hetero travails. And this is called Make My Heart Your Home. Goodbye. Ta-da.
Goodbye.
There may be a girl for me that loves like family. She may be searching for me. If it's meant to be, I hope I fall for her like the sun falls on the ground. I hope she shines bright enough for me, bright enough to be found. And if I ever find you, here's what I'd say. If I believe in you, and you believe in me, the love will shine bright enough to see, wherever you may be. And if I ever find you, here's what I'd say. Come into my life. You'll never be alone. My arms are open wide, so make my heart your home.